I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the autopilot edition of the month. Chance for us to watch a pilot episode of a TV show and geek out about it. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. And this week, we're talking about my wife's favorite sitcom, Friends.
That stupid clap.
And they still do it in this house. They avoid skipping the intro so that they can still clap to it, and then they'll skip the intro. It's annoying.
Really?
Yeah.
After the clap, they skip the intro?
They wait for the clap to happen. So that's legit.
Yes. Friends first aired September 22nd, 1994 on NBC. Mm-hmm. With writers David Crane and Marta Kaufman. They are the showrunners, show creators. They conceived of it, along with some help from Mark Littlefield, who was an exec at NBC. But the director of episode one was our dear friend, James Burrows. Remember, he directed the first episode of Cheers, too.
Oh, right. And long-time dude on not just Cheers, but went on to do some stuff with Frasier. And he kind of owned the 90s, the early 90s, that guy, with a few other exceptions. But he was the big man. All right, so I'm already seeing dissension in the chat room, and I want to address this. This is the perfect chance for me to bring this up. A lot of people find Friends very divisive. Some people love it. A lot of people hate it.
Some people don't have them.
Some people don't have friends.
They don't understand.
But the show in our household has always had a love-hate relationship. On the one hand, my wife and my girls in particular, both, all three of them quite like Friends. Although my second youngest or my middle daughter, not all the time. It depends on her mood. But for the most part, they're generally positive about it and they'll laugh at it and that sort of thing. I was always more of a Seinfeld guy when it came to my 90s sitcoms. And so I will watch Friends, but when I check out of Friends, it's when Friends tries to get serious about relationships or on a very special episode of kind
a
of
very
vibe.
Special episode.
I hate that in comedies. My favorite comedies don't have any of this. And Friends, sadly, has a little bit of it. I think they got away with it, though, for lots of reasons. But I think it's a good one for us to cover, for regardless of how we feel about it or how people generally feel about it, because it is, without question, a bona fide monster hit that still pays dividends for everybody that was in those things. Something in the range of $20 million a year they get just because it exists in reef or in
well, and it has become emblematic of the streaming wars, right? Because there is a rather predictable, I think, fascination with Friends by younger millennials and Gen Z folks who look at it and think, wow, that's what life was like in the 90s? Really? Mm-hmm. That's how you talked about things on TV back then? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Kind of the way, you know, people in the 80s watched the Brady Bunch or Ozzie and Harriet. Even I Love Lucy, I think, carried on some popularity across generations because of that. And Friends being on Netflix and losing it to HBO Max because Warner Brothers originally produced it for NBC and owns the rights to it, has become like the shortcut for talking about how you feel about the streaming wars. So Friends is still very much an important part of culture right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. And it's interesting. You mentioned I Love Lucy. That's a good touch point. When I was in high school, for some reason, reruns of I Love Lucy would be on the weekends. This is, of course, way pre-streaming. We couldn't do that yet. But I would go out of my way to try to catch it. I would try to catch the Beverly Hillbillies. I would try to catch can't think of it now.
Andy Griffith
show. Yeah, I would watch those pretty religiously. Dick Van Dyke, other stuff, because it was this weird peek into my parents and more than that, even my grandparents' generation when they would have been 20s working on their 30s, and this was the popular entertainment. So I can tell you from direct experience.
Your grandparents?
Oh yeah, my grandma loved.
Because my grandparents were in their 20s before television was invented.
Well, let's see if you count. Maybe it was, I mean, I guess they had their favorite shows, but I guess
my grandpa turned 20 in 1903.
I guess it'd be more like my, I guess it'd be my parents with I Love Lucy. That doesn't
but
sound
your grandparents
right,
would have, and some of my grandparents were in their 30s and 40s during the 50s with television.
Yeah. So that's about right. But they love that stuff. And I wanted to know what they liked and ended up liking it myself. And I can tell you from direct experience that my household full of Gen Zs, I guess one technically is a millennial, the oldest. They love this stuff. Like they make a regular watching of shows that I would have that were like this for me, like MASH and this and Cheers. And the other day, they were all watching the Dick Van Dyke Show for the fourth time all the way through. Like they love this stuff, and I don't know what that is or what it means, but I think Friends is in that same kind. It's entering, if it hasn't already entered, that same weird space. Of is this what 20 somethings did in New York in 1995? And how do they afford apartments that big? The answer is definitely no.
But it's certainly what the perception of it was in some circles anyway. Yeah. It's interesting too. I have a couple other thoughts on here. First of all, the wider thought and then the personal thought.
All right.
The wider thought is amongst our generation, Friends is so emblematic of its decade, the 90s, and it is so culturally important that it definitely suffers from the, I am more antagonistic about Friends than I would be otherwise because it's so popular.
Yeah.
It is the kind of show that, like you said, it can be considered divisive because people who I think if it wasn't popular would just sort of shrug it off and go, nah, not my thing. Didn't think it was that funny, that interesting, whatever. Sure. Actively talk about how much they hate Friends. And it's a badge of honor to compete, to be the person who hates Friends the most amongst your friends, because you want to show just how cool you are that you don't like Friends.
Yeah.
It definitely has that. It engenders that in society, at least in our generation.
I agree. And it's important to note here, everybody in Friends, the Friends universe, they directly represent our generation. When they were 22, we were 22. When they were 25, we were 25. Like this is supposedly our age group, Generation X, out there living in an apartment and they can't afford. And so we
and that would never be that size in Manhattan.
Right. And it's hard not to get frustrated with the parts of it that may even appeal to my wife. Like Kim likes the Ross Rachel thing. And we'll get to the pilot in a second, but the overarching themes, I just want to touch on these. She likes the Ross Rachel thing, or she likes the Chandler Monica thing later. And she likes those things. And when they get a little sappy and when the crowd goes, I hate that stuff, but she likes it because to her, that's comfort food from a different time. I see it and I just get annoyed. And I sometimes wonder if this is, it's hard for me to not say that this doesn't feel like something that cuts along gender lines. I'm sure there are plenty of women who hate it, plenty of men who like it. I'm sure that, you know, there's no blanket statement here that's going to work for everybody. But it did feel while I was in it and now that my stuff's divided between the women of my life and the men of my life. And I don't know why. It's just one of those.
Yeah, shows. Maybe. There may be something to at least that aspect of it. I know a lot of people want to use their hatred of Friends to show how smart they are. And I don't think that's what you're talking about. You're talking about just kind of hearing something and going, it's just not my cup of tea. But also at the same time admitting sometimes pretty good episodes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've laughed. There have been times I've laughed. I mean, I still to this day think that Phoebe's character was kind of brilliant and one of my favorites, and she played it really well. Lisa Kudrow's very good at being Phoebe, and I have very fond memories of everything to do with Phoebe. I really like David Schwimmer as an actor post Friends. I loved him in the World War II thing on Band of Brothers. That's what he was.
Boys to Men.
Fantastic boy band. Yeah. Band of Brothers. He was great in that.
Band of Brothers.
He was really good in that recent O.J. Simpson case thing that they did on AMC or whatever it was, or FX. Really good on that as Robert Kardashian. Like he's got the chops, and I've always enjoyed him post Friends. On Friends. Can't stand Ross. Don't want to go near him. Don't want anything to do with Ross. Rachel, same thing. I cannot stand it. It's vapid and weird. Joey makes me laugh most of the time. Chandler's pretty funny in small doses, but I'm kind of all over the place on the thing. And in the end, it's like Phoebe, who's my favorite. Do you have a favorite?
So the personal side of this, because Friends is in my head a little bit like Star Trek Voyager, in that it spans an era of great change in my personal life. So Friends, like I said, came out in 1994. When it aired, I remember it being pushed as the Generation X show. Finally, a show for us.
Yeah.
That's going to show what life is like for you guys, you Generation Xers living in your 20s with your hard, low-paying jobs and no prospects in the future, and just hanging out with your friends. And I was lured by that siren song. I thought, wow, you know what? I mean, I don't know if I trust mainstream television to deliver that, but that sounds pretty good. You know, I kind of loved Northern Exposure, which had a little bit of that too. So, all right, NBC, let's see what you got.
Yeah.
And I sat down in the house I shared with two other guys, one who worked at the bookstore with me and the other who was an Army National Guard Reserve and worked at a computer company by day. And we had a couple of our friends over and we sat down and we're like, all right, we're going to watch this Friends that's about us. Here we are living in Austin, Texas. We are your target market. We didn't finish it.
Oh man.
We turned off the TV partway through.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, it's just, I mean, no, this is New York elitism. It's paper thin characters. I mean, the fact that they're all in a pretty cool looking coffee shop all the time feels like pandering. No. We didn't finish it. And for years, I would say to people when they asked, do you like the show Friends? I'm like, never seen a full episode. And people would say, wow, that's crazy. And I had a couple other opportunities where I watched partial episodes and I was like, no, still just don't like it.
It's not doing
it. I was on a date with a woman named Merritt, as a matter of fact.
Really? Merritt? You almost there was
thought it was going to all work out, right? She could have been Merritt, but no, it didn't. And she was like, I'm going to make you watch Friends. And so we started watching Friends and we didn't finish watching Friends. I didn't watch a full episode of Friends until I started dating Eileen Rivera, my current wife,
who was very fond of Friends.
First person who successfully got me to watch a full episode of Friends.
Yeah.
As I was able to get her to appreciate Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Voyager, she became hooked on Voyager and was watching it every week with me. I too became hooked on Friends in its last few years because we started dating in 2000. So,
and in 04,
sometime in that year is when she got me into the Friends camp.
Yep.
And so I watched it for its last few years there. And so I felt like, oh, I finally grew up and was able to look past the pandering and the stupid jokes, which are there.
Oh, yeah.
And find those elements of it that did have heart. And we're talking about real situations and the humor in it. And she helped me see that. And I felt like a better person at the end for without compromising my own values, being able to appreciate what Friends was. It was an essential part of Eileen and I sort of bonding together that we were able to see appreciation in each other's things. And so Friends has come for me from at the beginning, meaning like a horrible attempt to pander to my generation, to something I just have never been able to get into, despite how popular it is, to something that means something pretty valuable to me.
She was there for you if you ever need a thing.
When the rain started to fall and stuff, all of that. Yeah.
So, all right. That's super interesting because I think that matters. Like that stuff is, it seems like it shouldn't have anything to do with the actual entertainment, but who we are and when we are the thing we are has a big impact for the thing we're consuming. So, you know, kids have a very different perception of something like Star Wars when they're kids. So if you talk to a kid who grew up with, you know, Phantom Menace, he loved that thing and thought it was the greatest thing ever. Old farts like us are like, ooh, that was bad. Wish we could go back to when I was 8 when everything seemed good. So it's kind of one of those things. And the fact that you were in that situation then and Eileen came into your life and you guys found this little bonding moment, that and the Star Trek stuff, which is awesome to hear as well. Because I just assumed she came in with all the Star Trek stuff blazing. Because I've heard her talk very lovingly about Star Trek before. Heard Eileen say
Star Trek
that for years.
The original series, right. Star Trek, the original series. Yes, but not so much the Next Generation and certainly not Voyager.
Right.
So though, you know, it's not that she didn't come in with her geek cred. Don't get me wrong.
Sure. It was a fair trade is what I'm saying. You did a good job on doing that. So here's the thing, or the reason we've kind of laid out why we do or don't like Friends or parts that we do like and all of that. I think it got real weak in the final seasons, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about how weird this pilot is to me and see if you agree. So the pilot, pilots normally, if they get approved, sometimes they film a whole nother one. Or if the one that gets approved, you try to have it be as consistent with the rest of the series as possible, usually.
And this pilot in particular did not get refilmed because NBC did a put option.
Right.
Which meant they were on the hook financially if they didn't pick it up. They were so confident that they wanted this that they were willing to pour the money into it. So, of course, they filmed the pilot and kept it and used it. It is known as the pilot, although sometimes you will see it referred to as the one where it all began, or the one where Monica gets a roommate, or even apparently in some places, the first one.
Right.
Because all the Friends episodes after that are the one with, the one where, et cetera.
Right. I do that with FilmSack and didn't realize that Friends had also done that. And now I think people think I'm copying Friends when I do that. So I don't.
You are unintentionally, I guess.
I might be. Yeah. But anyway, so here's what I find funny about that. Because that thing's on, not repeat, but it's on a lot in this house. I noticed that after watching the pilot once, the second episode felt very different to me. Tonally, visually, everyone's hair is a little different. Clothes choices had improved dramatically over one episode.
The pilot was finished with edits. It was filmed on May 4th and finished with edits on May 11th, 2 days before NBC announced the schedule. So it was a last minute add to its fall schedule for 1994. There's a few months between the beginning of this one and the next one, but it wasn't like some pilots where there can be even up to a year.
Yeah, that's true. And so it wasn't as long as it should be for how it felt to me, because everything just felt weird. I don't know if it's the director's aesthetic or if it was something else, but even they're like, Joey is in leather in every scene, different clothes every time, but leather vest, leather pants, leather jacket, leather. Always got the leather on, and his hair's ridiculous, and that wouldn't get fixed too much. But he played a very different character. He wasn't as ditzy and dumb. They were pushing all that toward Phoebe, and they were also playing up Phoebe's more hippie side. Her whole like spirit healing and the stuff she gets into, and that would all evolve very quickly over the next couple of episodes. But
she always had that. But wow, that first episode just is like, did you get that she's a hippie? Did we hit you over the head with that enough? Yeah. Here you go.
Yeah,
here's
exactly.
Another episode. Yeah,
here's another one. And then in the case of Joey in particular, he started out, and my wife leans over to me because we watched this together. We decided we'd do the pilot in this more, watch it for all the reasons I need to talk about it on Current Geek kind of perspective. And so we're watching it, and she leans to me and she goes, Joey is playing Tony Danza in this. And I went, oh my gosh, dude, you're freaking right. It really is a Tony Danza-esque portrayal in that first episode. And it goes away almost entirely after that pilot. It's just not the same. But up till that moment, he is like Tony Danza reincarnated, who never left, but he's still with us. But you know what I mean? Like, he's that character again.
Reincarnated while Tony Danza was still alive.
Yeah.
So Joey was originally supposed to be like just a smarmy actor type.
Right.
And Matt LeBlanc made him dumber and gave him more heart. And so there's some interviews and some descriptions from the writers where they said, we started in that first season, particularly they did it with all the characters, where they started changing who the characters were based on the actors' portrayals.
Right.
And Joey was one of the most extreme differences, where they changed who that character was based on Matt LeBlanc's performance. And so in that pilot, you're seeing kind of a hybrid, like he's dressed like the original character and he's sometimes acting like the original character, but sometimes he's Matt LeBlanc's take on Joey. And that had not quite evolved. That is not yet fully formed. I think that's what you're reacting to, right?
Absolutely. And if you, and you almost, you kind of have to watch it again. Those who are listening, wondering what we're talking about, you kind of just need to see it in that context. In fact, I did a really weird thing. I just saw the finale a couple of days before, and I'd never seen the finale for whatever reason, just never did. So the finale's on, and it's bad. It's not a good finale. I don't like it. However, then watching the pilot after the finale, that's a weird experience. It's probably weird for any show like that runs 10 years, right? Like, it's just a weird thing to do. Watch the Cheers finale, then go watch episode one again. Like, it's a very odd thing to do. But I did that, and it really helped frame these differences for me, because I saw the most recent thing they did as those characters and then the first thing they did. And they're very different. And I find that kind of thing kind of entertaining and fascinating all by itself, even if I hated Friends, and I don't. Friends isn't my favorite comedy ever, but I don't love it or something. But even if I really hated it, this was still worth doing as an experiment for me, because I'm fascinated by that evolution, how voices change, how writing changes, and some of it just by the nature of, like, this character needs to improve, therefore this is going to change. Or dumb stuff, like I noticed the intro to the pilot is entirely in that fountain. That public fountain they're always bouncing around in. And they use bits and pieces of that for the rest of the series as they mix it in with other edits for that. And someone's always clapping.
That's so funny, because the one thing I did as soon as I was done watching the pilot, I was like, I remember seeing that all the way to the end. Did they use that all the way to the end? Because they look so different. They look different in that fountain episode than they do in the pilot.
I agree.
Like, yeah. I'm like, what is going on? So I went to the finale and just watched and fast forwarded to the credits. And was like, oh, they cut in a bunch of video of them from their, you know, from their actual, like, recent appearances. So it's almost even more disconcerting in later seasons, because you see them looking normal and then suddenly looking like 10 years younger, dancing in front of a fountain.
Looking like 21-year-olds out there in the fountain. And there's a moment in the fountain. This is a Scott thing, I'll admit it. So I'm just going to get this out of the way. But there's a moment where Chandler is laying backwards in that fountain. And again, it's just a quick cut sort of edit, but he's laying in that fountain, gargling fountain water and spitting fountain water in the air. That is the grossest idea ever. Don't drink fountain water. Have we not learned anything?
When you're in your 20s and your future's in front of you, you do crazy things, Scott. Crazy things.
Sick when I think about it. But anyway, there's that thing. And I think it adheres closer to the actual tone of the show. But the show's just kind of weirdly all over the place. The Rachel coming to meet everybody for the first time just feels funny. She's on the back end of that wedding she left.
And I couldn't tell if that felt funny because we know Jennifer Aniston. Even people who never watched Friends know Jennifer Aniston. And if you watched Friends, you know Rachel. You know Jennifer Aniston as Rachel. And so when she comes in as this outsider that only Monica knows, it's like, well, no, come on. It's Rachel. Everybody knows Rachel. Yeah, come on. What are you talking about?
It's weird to think in the trailer she wasn't already part of the fabric. And because she was the big breakout star. Like, as much as everybody else did pretty good, did okay outside of Friends, you have to give it to her and say, well, who had the most movie roles? Who got the most other gigs? Yeah. Who did all the other stuff? She's still working, too, in a very high-profile way. Like, she did just fine in that regard. I don't know why. It's so funny because I respect her in lots of other things, lots of other stuff. For some reason, I just can't stand the character of Rachel. I can't stand it. And I don't know why. I don't know what my problem is.
Well, I know you about your whole sour milk breath thing.
There's that too, which is all in my own head. But like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think it's because they got sappy and she was always at the center of the sap. And it just drove me a little bit up a wall. And again, you got to remember.
You know, it's interesting. Courtney Cox was originally going to be Rachel.
Oh,
because they wanted Monica to be a little less perky, and they thought Courtney Cox was too upbeat.
Yeah.
But they ended up after the audition, they're like, well, no, I like the way I like where she's going with this. And so another example where they changed the character of Monica because of who they got to play her. And that opened up Rachel for Jennifer Aniston, who, like you say, became the breakout star.
And I think that's to the show's credit, whether you like one of the characters or not, it is a show about characters you follow. That's its main draw. It's not the greatest comedy in the world or the best delivery in the world or the best sets or anything else. It's these characters that are formed in your head, and now you want to follow them all the way through. For good or for bad.
It's one of the best executions of an ensemble cast ever. Like we're saying Jennifer Aniston was a breakout star, but Rachel isn't ever the focus of Friends. No. Friends is very equitable in spreading out its storylines amongst all six of the major friends.
Yeah, including their agents getting them deals in the later seasons where they're like, look, we want $1.2 million each per episode or else we're out of here. And they wouldn't let anyone make more than the other. It was like a big, I remember that whole thing. They were big thing.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and now these days, hearing they make $20 million on the back end every year, each of them is just insane. I would just live on that. You don't need to, you know. If I'm Matt LeBlanc, I don't need to be in other stuff. I'll just go fishing.
Well, I mean, you might be in other stuff because you're bored and you just want to have fun, right? So why not? That's but a good point. You wouldn't need to.
It's a good point. And his show, I keep hearing his show on Showtime. What's it called? Singles or no? Crap. Anyway, it's where he plays himself. I keep hearing that's really funny. Like that's actually legit a good comedy and people should watch it. But there was a time here, though, there was a time in the 90s, late 90s, where these guys, didn't matter what they were doing, where they were going, or where they showed up, the entire world lost their minds. It was legitimately a smash monster, huge hit, maybe the biggest NBC ever had. I don't know how it compares to like Seinfeld or compares to Cosby Show or something like that, but it's
the finale of Friends was the fifth most watched TV primetime drama of all time. Drama, but you know what I mean.
It was a little dramedy.
Show and the most watched show of the 2000 of the decades of the 2000.
Wow. So after I found out about this 20 million thing, I started wondering, do all the bit party people that hung around for a while, that would play like Phoebe's boyfriend for four episodes or, the one guy, I forgot his name, the actor's name, but he played Phoebe's brother and he was kind of wacky and had,
Who got points on the back end and who got, paid one, you know,
Like, I'm really curious about that.
A single appearance fee, and that was it.
Is there that much money to go around? I mean, I know the show's still in all kinds of syndication on lots of channels all over the place, all over the world, really. But then you throw in whatever Netflix deal was struck and whatever Disney's deal
is. Well, Netflix has the syndication deal, which they're losing because Warner Brothers is taking it back to put it on HBO Max.
Oh, right. HBO Max is getting it. I keep saying Disney, and it's not Disney.
No. Nope.
It's getting confusing with everybody with their new stuff, but... But anyway,
if only there were a show to help you make sense of all this.
Does it rhyme with schmored pillars?
That sounds like something Scandinavian, but sure. Okay, yeah, probably does.
That was the other thing I meant to look up and I didn't, but I assume that just like every other very popular show that happens here, or in the case of The Office in the UK, everyone everywhere makes a version of it. There had to have been Friends, like Hungarian Friends episodes, right? Like this all existed.
Well, I mean, we should before you brought it up, we should have done a search to find the answer to that because I bet it's findable. But what I will say is this is a harder one to make work. You know, ripping off Star Trek means like, okay, we get a bunch of actors, put them on a spaceship, right? And they're wearing uniforms and holding guns and space stuff. Bob's your uncle. Now we got a show.
Right.
Friends. The magic of it wasn't the setting. The magic of it wasn't like, oh, it's six friends. The magic of it was the relationships between those friends. That's what made people like it. And those relationships were very dependent on the cultural milieu in which they had placed them, Manhattan in the 90s. If you had a Hungarian Friends, you'd have to figure out like, okay, what's the cool thing that Hungarians will nod at and go, oh, that's exactly like my friends, right? That's trickier.
Yeah, you're right. I was trying to do a quick search while you were talking about that just to see if I could...
Yeah, I was trying to buy you time.
Find it. Instead, I found a huge list of ones I didn't know about, but we knew about The Office, but did you know that there was a Belarus version of The Big Bang Theory, for example? It was called...
That makes sense. Like, you've got a more simple... premise. And same with The Office, right? The reason they were able to license so many of The Office episodes out was because, okay, you know, everybody's got work culture. Work culture is a lot more similar.
My favorite is House MD was made in Japan under the name Team Medical Dragon. That's awesome.
Team Medical?
Yep. Team what? Medical Dragon.
usually the Wikipedia article for these things is pretty good at talking. Like there's that whole Wikipedia article about multiple versions of The Office.
Yeah.
The only thing it mentions is Joey.
Really? Really? Joey's the only...
It's the only spinoff of Friends. It is the aftermath to Friends MASH.
Yeah.
Was watched... The final broadcast of Joey on March 7th, 2006 was watched by 7 million people.
Yeah, that's... Wow. I mean, people had high hopes for that thing. It did not go well, though. That was a bit of a bummer in the end, that Joey spinoff. I'm actually surprised they didn't try to get more out of there than just Joey. Like, I'm a little surprised they didn't try to do more spinoffy something else with Friends. It just seemed like it was too big. You had to
Too much money, you right? So? I mean, they could afford to give those actors $1.2 million each in the final seasons because they knew they could deliver the audience. Mm-hmm. A spinoff, yeah, that's a whole much bigger gamble. So you might go with Matt LeBlanc, who, let's be honest, when the six of them aren't teaming up together, is probably going to command less money than Jennifer Aniston and David Schwimmer at that point, and say like, okay, well, we can give you a little less money, and that gives this show a little more chance at success. Problem with Joey is that they put Matt LeBlanc in a very stereotypical sitcom set, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't capture what Friends tried to capture. Friends was, in fact, Mark Littlefield, what am I saying his name wrong? I think I'm saying his name wrong. Littlefield, anyway, from NBC,
yeah,
really wanted it to be a Gen X-oriented show.
Right.
And the creators, Crane and Kaufman, resisted that. They're like, no, I mean, yes, they're going to have Gen Xers in it, but we wanted to appeal to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that was part of my reaction at the time was, gosh, this feels like it could have been a show for me, but it's seems like it's watered down because Crane and Kaufman wanted to make sure it appealed to everyone. Yeah. But they were right because it appealed to everyone and it did really well. Joey just felt like it went too far that way. It didn't have anything unique about it. It didn't feel even like a show that, well, it's meant to appeal to this subset, but it's, you know, broadened out. It just felt too formulaic.
Yeah. And it's such a rare thing anyway. You only get one Frasier for every... You know, for every 10 yeah. Joeys, it's just the way that works. But
or Trapper John MD.
It's not the worst thing I ever watched. I watched Joey for as long as it was on. It was okay. It
just, we actually watched Joey, I think, all the way through. Hmm.
They had a season.
The damning praise of Joey is that it was inoffensive.
Yeah, it was okay.
I never watched it and said that was awful. I would never watch it and say that was great. That was like, you know, Matt LeBlanc, he's not bad.
All right. I did find the Iranian version of Friends. It was called Love Is Not Closed. and it was based on Friends. In fact, the kitchen is a lot like Monica's kitchen in color and everything. And apparently there's a trailer, although it's taken off YouTube, so I don't know why. But apparently this exists and you could
Where
watch.
Where is it?
Let's see. It's Iranian. And it's called Love Is Not Closed, and it was Friends basically, but in Iran. And I can't find the trailer anymore. It says video unavailable when I go to the YouTube link, so it's too bad. Anyway,
I'll be there for you when the moolah calls. something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's something like that. Anyway, do you think, so recent rumors have resurfaced that this show could see new life or that they could do a spinoff series or a sequel series or maybe even a follow these guys around in a quirky sort of real life docu-comedy that's like, hey, this is the actual actors. They're being forced to be on Friends again.
Well, like they're doing with 90210.
Yes, like that. That's the example of one that's, I guess, working. I don't know. I haven't seen it. So that all came from an interview that Aniston did on the couch with... Ellen, and had said she'd be all for this and that most of the other actors would be too. It would just be a matter of striking the right deal or whatever and getting everybody together again.
Yeah.
I
that,
think
that last little, there's so few words, strike, just a matter of striking the right deal. So hard to do.
Right. And she's not, you know, she's in movies. She's been in a couple of Netflix movies in a row. She's in that new Apple thing, the morning show. Like, she's busy.
The morning stream.
Yeah. Morning show, isn't it? Is it show or
stream? Oh, yeah, TMS.
It better be show and not stream, or we're going to sue.
No, it's show.
Anyway, everyone else is just sitting around, though. Like, you could get Chandler out of bed right now, and he'd say, all right, whatever, I'll do it. So just make that happen.
Is that true? Matthew Perry's not doing anything.
He's not doing a lot.
We always, I resist this because the lazy conventional wisdom is to think if I haven't seen an actor, they're not doing anything. Right. And the fact of the matter is there are so many things being produced that they're probably doing something. You just didn't know about it. So I'm actually curious because you're right. Like, I know Matt LeBlanc's doing things. David Schwimmer's out directing. I know he's mm-hmm. working hard. I've actually seen Lisa Kudrow in things recently. Jennifer Aniston is very prominent doing stuff, as we just mentioned.
Yeah.
But you're right. I haven't seen Matthew Perry in anything lately. We should look him up on IMDb.
Yeah, I'm looking right now. Last thing he did was a TV miniseries where he played Ted Kennedy in the Kennedys After Camelot. I don't know why my phone thought I was talking to it right now.
When was that?
It says a miniseries in 2017.
Oh, okay. That's not that long ago.
Why is my...
Doesn't have anything in production?
Why is my phone... Hold on. My phone or something just... I can't tell what's playing. Hey, Siri.
I can't hear anything if you're thinking there's...
I can totally hear music coming out. You can't hear it, though?
No.
All right. I have no idea what's doing that. Something's playing music in here. Alexa, stop. Oh, that's really obnoxious. Okay, forget it. If you can't hear it, I don't care. He did something called The Good Night, which was some other TV series in 2017, and The Odd Couple. It was some sort of reboot. He played Oscar Madison.
Okay, so he's been working.
Yeah, a bunch of failed pilots, sadly, but it looks like a few things. Yeah, stuff here and there before that, 2015.
But back to your main point, do I think they will do it? Yes. I think they will do something. There's enough money being thrown around with the Amazons and Netflixes and Disney Pluses of the world. And certainly HBO Max is going to want to throw money at them. AT&T owns HBO Max. HBO Max is not HBO. It's HBO Plus, a bunch of other stuff from Warner Studios. And they're going to get friends back on their service next year. Why wouldn't they want to use that intellectual property for something?
Right.
Will they make a new series? I don't think so. I don't think those actors want to tie themselves up to the work schedule that is required for a new Friends series. Not all six of them anyway.
What if they did just a 2-hour style movie? It's a comedy.
Yeah, that feels more likely.
Yeah, I could see that. That's the thing I could
see. And
totally
it could totally be some fun faux documentary, like you say, like 90210, where they're like, where these six friends were, you know, they were friends. We've decided to follow up on these six random people to see where they are now.
Yeah. Or something. And it could be kind of funny. Plus, if that was a thing that HBO Max and Warner could pull off, that would be a huge push for them to get people to try out HBO Max. You know, that'd be a big giant event kind of thing. So yeah, I think there's possibilities. By the way, just for the record, I did find out what was playing the music. For some reason, my iPad thought I asked to play Religious Vomit by the Dead Kennedys. And there it is.
Oh, right. That was when you asked it to play Religious Vomit by the Dead Kennedys. I assume that was just something that gets you amped up to continue talking.
Well, that's true most days, but today,
sure,
not so much. I don't know what that was.
Today is not that day.
So would you still, like, if someone's never seen Friends, did we point them that direction? You think it's even possible that you could? Okay.
I do. I mean, it depends on the person, right? Yeah. If it's somebody who's like, don't really love sitcoms of the 90s, then no.
Yeah.
If it's someone who's like, no, I want like serious, you know, dark, it can be funny, but, you know, even Sabrina is too light for me. No. But if somebody's like, I don't know, I'm looking for older shows, classic shows. Yeah. Friends is definitely up there as a cultural icon. And maybe they won't make it through all 10 seasons. Cause man, that's a lot of episodes, especially 26 episodes a season, but they'll probably have an enjoyable time. And I bet there's some really good guides out there of like the essential Friends episodes to watch.
Just yeah.
If you don't want to watch every episode, cause they do vary in quality, here are the ones that you can't miss.
Right. I would say that also, if you found yourself to be a fan of the more modern How I Met Your Mother, you're probably going to like Friends.
Yeah, Friends has a lot of influence on future comedies as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's just like with Cheers, although funnily enough, not as obvious in the pilot, but just like with Cheers, there are parts of Friends that definitely continue to be cited and thrown around as memes.
Yeah.
Long after it's gone off the air. It's been off the air for 15 years now.
That's a weird thing to even hear. It's been that much time. And that for each of those 15 years, they have earned $20 million a year. They have all made about 300 grand.
I was in my 30s when it went off the air.
Really? Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah. 2004. I remember just not finding any comedies that were currently on funny anymore after 9/11 that were set in New York. If you were in New York, that's what your backdrop was. I stopped liking you after 2001, September. It's me. It's a
that
me
seems
thing.
Unfortunate, doesn't it?
Completely agree. But for whatever reason, it soured me, especially comedies and especially ones that were in New York, and especially if they tried to address it in the writing of the show. I really rubbed me wrong. I couldn't do it.
Well, because that can go wrong very easily in a comedy.
Right.
It's one thing if you're, you know, if you're doing New York Fire and it's like, well, okay, built right in. You just tell real stories. But if it's like Fun Times in Manhattan on a very special fun time, you don't like on a very special anything, do you?
No, I hate him. You know, the worst egregious offender was that Blossom show. It was also on in the 90s.
Oh, Blossom.
Alf was at least, well, Alf was bad too, but
give me a break.
Any of those, like
Punky Brewster.
Punky Brewster is bad. Silver Spoons was bad.
Family Ties,
all of it's bad because they all spent so much time going, oh, so-and-so's
friends
got AIDS. Here's a special episode about AIDS. Or here's the one where Arnold and his buddy go to the bike shop and Mr. Carlson from WKRP in Cincinnati decides to molest them or whatever happened. It was an awful, awful thing.
Gosh.
Yeah, that's true, by the way, the thing I just said. And when I when I watched that, I remember even at a young age going, don't pander to me like this. Like, you're just trying to squeeze it out of me. Like, this isn't real. You're supposed to be funny. Have laugh tracks and tell jokes, which is why I have so much respect for Seinfeld as a show. They never did
facts
that.
Facts of Life?
The Facts of Life, also bad. You
different
can't name...
Strokes.
Bad.
MASH.
Silver Spoon's bad. MASH, I make a
on a very special MASH was definitely a thing.
It was always a thing, but that's the thing. They were always in war, and war meant that at any minute we could get serious, and I was okay with that. In fact, Futurama made fun of that in an episode where they were at a MASH-like camp, and there was a Hawkeye robot, and he had two settings for his switch, comedy and war as hell. And you'd switch it, and he would be going, ah, look at me, I'm being funny, I'm a doctor. And then you'd flip it, and you'd go, oh, the war, the ravages of war. And it was funny, but also true. Like, that's why I think that show got away with it. But for most of, like, the 80s and 90s when it came to sitcoms, most of them did the thing I hate, and I, as a result, don't love that stuff. As a result, I don't feel the way about those things that I feel about, I don't know. You know who can get away with it? Animation. The Simpsons can get away with it. Early episodes where Maggie's first word is Homer is sappy as hell and totally pandering. The Fry episode of, or the dog, Fry's dog episode in Futurama.
I
know,
it's a whole,
it's a heart tugger, heartbreaker, but somehow it's okay in animation. Why I make that distinction? Dunno. But whenever it's
because it's distanced.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because it's animated. You're like, those aren't me. I'm not animated.
Right. I think that's it.
Not that you aren't animated, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, that for some reason works for me. But anyway, Friends, everybody, it's available. Netflix has
all of it. Back to Friends. We would be remiss in calling this autopilot if we didn't at least mention Paul the Wine Guy.
Oh, okay, let's do that. Paul the Wine Guy, who would never be heard of again after episode
one. Well, and also, he's just a running bit. He's a bit to make Monica... make Monica's plot, because the plots here are Ross has broken up with his girlfriend because she discovered she's a lesbian. That's probably the most Gen X of these plot lines. Yeah. Like, ooh, they said lesbian in 1994. Oh my God. And then there's, the main through line of Rachel, running away on the day of her wedding, which just, we never really understand why she ran away. We just know that her dad's rich and she's trying to be independent, which sets up a stronger character for the rest of the series, but never gives us the real reason of like, okay, but why then did you leave on your wedding? I mean, that's a big deal, leaving on your wedding.
Cute
other
dad.
Than she thought he looked like a hamster or something.
Plus, she stayed in her wedding dress with the headpiece on for hours and hours and hours. Like, all right, we get the visual.
And then the other plot line, of course, being Monica on, like, finally getting a date, which that's the one that really made, I back in the day, really made me feel like it was pandering, like this old trope. I was actually into Paul the Wine Guy until the very obvious, like, it was just a line. Yeah. It's like that's right up there with it was all a dream.
Yeah. I don't like it's all a dream storylines. Unless you're, I can't think of his name. The old show in the 60s where it turned out to all be a dream. He's laying in bed next to his wife.
Oh, Newhart.
Yeah, Newhart. How Newhart, the Newhart from the 80s ended with him waking up from the Newhart from the 70s with his wife from the 70s. That was brilliant.
That was a good use of that trope.
And it's the only time. Here's what's brilliant about it. You can never do it again. No one can do that again. If you do,
only the Simpsons can do it as an homage to Newhart. Anytime you do it, that's the only way it's going to happen.
Right. And once again, animation can get away with more anyway. So
there you go.
Yep. We've solved all of TV's riddles.
Maybe Kevin Hart could do it.
Kevin Hart could do it. Let's hope his back heals. I guess he's in a lot of pain right now for some back injury.
Best wishes.
Yes. Best wishes there, Kevin Hart. That's it for today's show. Now, next month, our autopilot episode will be Doogie Howser. Speaking of a very old thing that should have probably typecast its star, and the opposite has happened.
And did.
So which is,
all through the 90s, if you saw him, you thought, oh, look, it's Doogie Howser.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And it's got music.
In fact, even when How I Met Your Mother came out, there was still a little like, oh, yeah, and Doogie Howser's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. He's Neil Patrick Harris now.
For me, the big breakout for him was a two-stroke genius. The first was appearing as himself in the Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle movie. And that was a really funny thing he did. And then showing up, what was the other thing he did that I loved? I forgot already. But then he did a bunch of Tony stuff and got legit. Dr. Evil.
Dr. Horrible.
Dr. Horrible. Yeah, that was big. So that stuff, but he earned it, man. And so I want it next week or next month. We'll end up talking about that. We'll talk about how Will Smith did it and a few other names. Michael J. Fox did it. There are people who've done it. And why them and not the other people around them? Like, why? I'm trying to think of it, like even a sibling pairing that's like one of them just killed it and the other one just couldn't break out of their typecast. I can't think of them right now, but
Donnie and Marie.
Sure. Like, why not the rest of the Osmonds, I guess? But then why not them again?
I don't know. You said brother, sister. That was the first one.
I can't think of another one. But why do they have the one person breaks
out? The Judds.
Okay, in Friends terms, why Jennifer Aniston and not everybody else at that level? They all had various levels of success. But
David Schwimmer did break out, and it feels like he made a conscious decision to not act as much.
Yeah,
it does really
feel that way.
Really move towards more production directing.
Ironically, that dude doesn't age. Everybody else shows their age or shows the work they've had done to hide their age. Schwimmer of the entire cast, don't know what's going on with him. He's got some genetic thing that makes him permanent young.
Well, it's the portrait of David Schwimmer that he has.
That that's probably what it is. And then who else? I mean, Matthew Perry did a bunch of movies. He had a real spurt there, but Aniston's the last. She's the one that really hung on. So why that is and what that's all about, we'll talk about that in more detail with Doogie Howser in 1 month. Next week, a news episode. Always excited for those. And at the end of today's show, stick around because Legal Geek is back to talk about the Grand Theft tax evasion, a review of how Rockstar UK, makers of Grand Theft Auto, has paid no taxes for over 10 years despite $5 billion in revenue.
And he'll explain how you also... No, he won't. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he won't. How you can
it's
do
called
it, too.
The Grand Theft Tax Plan. You, too, can pay no tax.
That'd be brilliant. Between now and then, though, Tom, anything else going on you want to mention before we go?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, I do. I'm very excited for the return of America's Next Top Podcasting Idol. Had our first coaching sessions yesterday in the pre-production stages. Look it up on your interwebs, America's Next Top Podcasting Idol, hosted by one Brian Ibbett, and some pretty incredibly intelligent judges on that show, right, Scott?
Yeah, I've heard they're all right. I know one in particular who I think is a pretty strong Robert Young. Yeah. The other two, who knows? I don't know. Actually, the combo of Jenny Josephson joining the crew of judges this year, and then my measured approach to all things judging, I think is going to make for the greatest season that that show's ever had out of the two.
Let me tell you, I'll give you a sneak peek.
Okay.
The teams are all top notch. they get the advantage of having been around to see this first season of this.
Yeah.
So they definitely are benefiting from that. All three teams had solid plans.
Yep.
They needed some tweaking. They definitely had questions, but they're already like tearing it up out of the gate. I can't wait to see.
It's a great group, and I agree with you 100%. I'm very excited about the season. It'll be a lot of fun. So check that out. There's lots of other stuff happening as well. So check out frogpants.com. Tom can be found over at thedailytechnewsshow.com as well. And find us on Twitter. Tom is over there at Ace Detect. I'm at Scott Johnson. And support us on Patreon if you can. It's a great way to show the show that you love it. And you can do it easily. Go to patreon.com/currentgeek. That's it. Patreon.com/currentgeek. Currentgeek.com for everything else. For me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
Back to Legal Geek. This week we cover an investigative report recently released that indicates Rockstar North, maker of the Grand Theft Auto video game series, has paid no tax in their home country for 10 plus years. An investigative nonprofit called TaxWatch UK revealed 2 weeks ago that Rockstar has received over $52 million of tax credits over the past 3 years. Furthermore, this report indicated that Rockstar has not paid UK tax for 10 or more years running. This is interesting because the company is based in Scotland and normally would be a tax boon for the United Kingdom, especially when you consider that the estimated operating profit of the company is about $5 billion in the same time period. It begs the question, where did all the taxes go? Perhaps this is a real-life case of grand theft, but tax evasion instead of auto carjacking. Rockstar does operate as a subsidiary of Take-Two Interactive, a U.S. company. Take-Two believes it is reasonable to push all profits from intellectual properties developed in foreign subsidiaries into the U.S. parent company, thereby allocating these profits to be taxed under U.S. law. These are done by an internal accounting process called internal royalties, which are paid to selected employees of the U.S. parent company to allow them to allegedly participate in the success of the software titles that they help develop. However, participation really just means moving all the profits to a tax-friendly jurisdiction, probably. Take-Two has a history of this even with respect to U.S. taxes, having used Bermuda to isolate profits from significant taxation in the 2000s. The primary problem is that the grant of the tax credits to the Rockstar UK company are for the purposes of boosting growth and profits within the country, so as to also increase the overall prosperity and tax base collectible from businesses in the country's economy. So this nonprofit watch group is asking for a review of future tax credits based on this possible violation of so-called arm's-length principles that govern when multinational companies can move profits between the jurisdictions. Generally speaking, arm's-length principles would not allow for what Rockstar and Take-Two are doing here, because the IP is being made in Scotland, and the marketing of the product and sales are also in Scotland. There's nothing criminal about the practice, but the tax benefits may be withdrawn if Take-Two continues to funnel all profits away from Rockstar's home country. The bottom line is, large multinational companies are just like individuals, and that we all try our best to pay as little tax as possible. That leads to stories like this, where our home country does not receive any significant taxes, sometimes for a decade or more, despite the wild success of a game maker like Rockstar with the GTA series. International tax evasion may just be a good theme for the next GTA game as well.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.